Welcome to Solutions for Higher Education, a podcast by Scott L. Wyatt, president of Southern Utah University in Cedar City, Utah. To subscribe to this podcast, please visit www.suu.edu/presidentspodcast, where you will find both the audio and a written transcript for today's podcast. Hi again, everyone, and welcome to Solutions for Higher Education, a podcast featuring Scott L. Wyatt, the president of Southern Utah University in Cedar City, Utah. I'm your host, Steve Meredith, and I'm joined, as I always am, today in the studio by President Wyatt. Hi, Scott.
Hello, Steve. It's great to be here, and we've got a fun topic coming up, don't we?
We do. And as you and I have talked over the years, I mostly am Ed McMahon to your Johnny Carson. Sorry for our young listeners that don't know who I'm talking about. But today I'm probably going to do a little bit more of the talking than I ordinarily might. And that's because we've been having a series of podcasts about innovation. And whenever I hear the word innovation, it always reminds me of a project that was around Utah about 25 years ago. And that I always found to be very innovative. We've been talking about, I think I actually worked on it a little bit, but that's not the point of this. I just always thought this was a terrific and very innovative project. And the name of the project is Innovators. And it was a musical CD featuring the talents of Kurt Bester and Sam Carden. Both great friends of mine and longtime collaborators in the music world, and of course dozens of other great talented musicians. But it's how it came about and how the scope of the project came about and how different it is that I have always found to be particularly innovative and a good guidepost to partnerships. We always are talking about partnerships between higher ed and business. They sometimes are natural, and then they sometimes appear out of in ways that we might not have considered. And this was one of those partnerships that perhaps people may not have considered to be a natural partnership. So anyway, I'm going to introduce Sam Carden, as I mentioned, good friend. Hi, Sam.
Hi, how are you doing?
We're glad to have you joining us. And Sam's brother, Doug, was also part of this project in a very important way. And Doug's joining us from Mesa, Arizona. Hi, Doug.
Hi, how are you? It's great to be here.
So tell us a little bit, if you can, Sam, about how this whole project came about. It was a partnership with WordPerfect, which was a software program in Provo, Utah. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Well, in their heyday, they were the king of the hill. You know, they had the most innovative word processing software. And we had a mutual friend, named Randy Blossom, who worked at the corporation. He was in charge of marketing, and they were releasing the 6.0 version of WordPerfect and wanted to do something other than t-shirts and baseball hats to commemorate it. And Randy came up with the idea of doing a music project, celebrating the idea of innovation, and reached out to me and Kurt. And this was during the days of, you know, kind of the heyday of new age music, for lack of a better term, and they never came up with a better term for it. But I think that there was a time when people were just looking for something more than your standard pop music, and so there was kind of a golden era for a storytelling type of music. And so, you know, it was one of those moments in time where it was the right moment in time, the right opportunity, and a really terrific company that gave us carte blanche. They literally provided carte blanche budget for us and gave us creative freedom to do whatever it was that we wanted. And, you know, the greatest luxury for me and for Kurt was to be able to reach out to my brother, Doug, who you know, is one of the brightest people I've ever known, and is a huge, well, has paid the price for a real deep intellectual preparation, and we knew that he would be the harvest of great ideas in terms of storytelling. So we were able to reach out to him and ask him if he would be willing to get involved in this project and help us find the stories that would help us tell, or at least try and explain in musical terms this idea of innovation, where it comes from, where that spark of genius happens. We're certainly not pretentious enough to, you know, consider ourselves innovators, but we were certainly trying to take an innovative approach to it. But maybe Doug can, you know, his take on that.
Right. When WordPerfect started with you on the project, as you suggest, they wanted more than t-shirts and something else. Did they have did they give you that idea to go find stories to write about specifically?
They didn't. They just said that their only mandate was give us something that celebrates innovation. That was their request.
I think that was a brilliant choice. I would never consider myself to be a composer, but I've written enough music to know that it's much easier if you have a backstory to write to, much easier to write to a character or to some storyline than to just face a blank sheet of paper. So you involved your brother Doug, and how did you choose the stories that you came up with?
Well, it was a for me also a kind of a blank table that they asked me to set, and it seemed like an unusual request because I was a scholar for sure, but I was not someone that had a reputation as being a writer or someone who was deeply immersed in the field of studies about people who had innovated and changed the world. But as Sam said, I do love to read, and I suppose you could consider me widely read. But when Sam and Kurt came up with the idea of having me come up with a cast of innovative individuals who were probably of the second or third tier, not a Thomas Edison, not Marconi and the radio, that kind of thing, but people.
That's true. I remember saying, "Let's not do the most obvious." Yeah.
And that, of course, made the task more difficult in a sense, but it made it much more interesting, and I think gave the an underlying theme to the work, and that is that this innovation can come from the most unlikely places, but it can be created or be brought about by people who are in other ways ordinary and common in their outlook toward life.
So, Sam, you and Kurt contacted Doug and said, give us some of these people that may be known, may be less known, certainly not people that perhaps immediately spring to mind necessarily as innovators. And did you wait to hear back from Doug as
we did,
to whom he chose?
Yeah. I think we may have crafted a couple of ideas. I guess it did go two ways a little bit, in that I remember we wanted to do something Americana, and so we asked Doug for an Americana story. He found a gem, this story of E.M. Hatfield. He was seeded clouds and was paid to seed the clouds in San Diego so that it would rain, and then it rained so much that it flooded the whole place, and he got sued. It's a hilarious story, and it was great fodder for our music. And so, there was that kind of exchange as well, where, hey, we need something like this. What have you got? Well, we're going to do something Brazilian. What have you got in that realm? And then Doug would come to us with, one of my favorites, the Sage of I don't know how you pronounce it, Lambarinais, I've always pronounced it, but the story of Albert Schweitzer. And, you know, I'd heard about Robert Foster, didn't know much about his story, but when Doug was able to explain the breadth and depth of it, was really inspiring. And you know, so that's the way it worked. There was a little bit of back and forth, but it was a really wonderful luxury to just wait for somebody else to provide that initial spark of creativity.
So, Doug, Sam mentioned the Albert Schweitzer story. Do you what drew you to that story?
When I was a young person, second, third, fourth grade, Albert Schweitzer achieved quite a bit of notoriety through writing for what was then Life magazine, which I loved, and mostly because of the pictures it had in it. But he was featured in it, and he was featured in the context of being someone who was important to improving health care for impoverished peoples in the equatorial Africa region of the world. That was my first exposure to him, but I had noticed over the years that his flame had receded somewhat, and that you didn't hear people talking about Albert Schweitzer in the course of conversation anymore. There was a period of time where he was consulted by world leaders about what to do about the arms race between the United States and Russia, and they would go by whatever means they had to ultimately canoe to get to his hospital on the shores of a river at Lambaronais, and they would ask him for his thoughts on it. And that had to have been somewhat out of the blue for Albert Schweitzer, even as he was a world-traveled person for that time, mostly between North America and Europe as a concert performer on the organ. But I am sure he wondered, why is it that people are coming to me to ask me about how to solve these global problems when I'm running? I used to be, in effect, a global or a world citizen traveling from place to place, but now I'm living in this little isolated place doing good. And it was his goodness, I think, that drew people to him, and it was his wisdom that they appreciated, and they knew that if Albert Schweitzer came up with a solution or a suggestion and they followed it or they incorporated it into their programs for approaching these international problems, that it would have worldwide credibility, because he was not seen as someone who had the interests of the large nations in his heart, but rather the interests of the world. And he had recently published a work whose theme was The Reverence for Life, which was primarily a book about a deep respect for any kind of living being, and realizing that it had its place. And why did it have its place? Well, it had its place because it was created by the God who created everything, and therefore, in a sense, it was made holy by that act of creation. And why then would men feel like they could be casual in its treatment? So I think they went to him for that reason. And his books, The Historical Jesus was one of them that I read when I was in high school, and his other works on theology and then the biographical works that were produced by Norman Mailer and others on his life were the things that made him important to me. I felt as though he should be, that the interest in him should be revived in some means. And while I didn't expect this project to be a huge platform, it certainly was huge for me because I had no platform prior to it. So I very much appreciated the opportunity to try and revive an interest in him and his work through this project.
And Sam, So Schweitzer is a musician, too, along with being all of the things that Doug was just talking about, and a well-known organist. So that drove some of your we hear little elements, right, of Bach and
yes, we did. Yes, one of the extraordinary things about him was that he had three world-class careers, you know, as a musician, as a theologian, and then as a medical doctor. And while he was, you know, in his phase as a musician, he was particularly famous for performing the works of Bach. And so we incorporated a small portion of Jesus of Man's Desiring in the piece of music. And then the other thing that, as Doug referenced, you know, he had this profound spirituality. And so we wanted to capture the essence of that, his love for Bach, and then the fact that he lived in this outpost in Africa. That was a really interesting thing to bring together those elements and try to figure out a way to fuse them and to make them into something that was coherent and felt cohesive. And it's, you know, those are always the most fun things when you're trying to put square pegs in round holes and something really interesting happens. It's something that we certainly would have never done if we didn't have those excuses to do it. And that's one of my favorite experiences of the project was that particular piece of music. And it has proven to be really impactful for people.
Well, let's go ahead and we'll have our listeners actually listen. This is Sam Carden and Kurt Bester, based on the story compiled by Doug Carden about Albert Schweitzer, and this is The Sage of Lambaronais. Thank you. So that was the Sage of Lambaronais, and so we want to move on to another one of the stories. And one of the things that always leaps off this CD for me is, and I say CD again for you young listeners at home, that stands for compact disc. We used to play them, they came after records, which we also used to play. But that's
and came after 8-track.
That's right. In there was 8-track.
I guess we need to release it on vinyl, revive it, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, one of the things that the recordings out of the collection that always jumped off out to me was La Capitana, and Sam, I just because I know a little bit about the production of this and have hung around with you guys for a long time. I know that it wasn't always smooth sailing, but how did you come to La Capitana?
Well, La Capitana was one of the pieces on the project where the producers requested flamenco music. They wanted something with a Latin flair. And so I remember talking to Doug about that, you know, what have you got? And he told us about this famous flamenco dancer. What's her name, Doug? I can't remember now.
I don't remember. I only remember her name as La Capitana, which was, of course, the name under which she danced.
Yeah.
And it was one that was given to her, though, by her audience.
But it was, I remember being at, I was actually in Arizona at the time visiting Doug, and we were going to go on a grand tour to Mexico. And the night before the trip, I think Doug had gone to bed and I stayed up for a little while and maybe you'd gone to do an errand or something. I remember being by myself at the piano at your house, Doug. And the initial idea for this, while I was thinking about Mexico, it came and the trip to Mexico materialized in a really comical way. And we had a fantastic trip, but it's interesting how sometimes the imagination is a stronger, influencer than actual experience. And
so her name was Carmen Amaya.
Oh, okay, there you go.
Yep.
That's right.
Anyway, I remember getting down with the piece of music, and you know, it was written to be a challenging virtuoso piece of music for a guitarist. And we sent the music down originally. I won't say this guy's name because I don't want to throw him under the bus, but he was a famous guitarist who had several CDs out. And sent it to him, and he sent back a note, an email to me saying that he felt like it was too hard and it didn't really reflect his style. That's what he said. And so we sent it to another guitarist named Grant Geisman, who's a very well-known LA session guitarist. And Grant agreed to a price and then sent the demo down, and then he called back and said, I need more money. So we spent some more time preparing, and then we had a fantastic rhythm section. My gosh, we had Dave Weckl on drums, because Neil Stigenhouse on bass, Grant Geist playing guitar. Sheila D was the percussionist on that particular song. And it was just a really, really fun experience in the studio. I think that one was a little bit more of, that was a musical journey for us, and it was less driven, I think, by story. But that was a convenient way to, to give an excuse to do production when we did the PBS special. And it did definitely have elements of flamenco. One of the most interesting is a technique called Las Palmas, where two groups of people clap. And when you listen to it, it sounds like almost impossibly fast claps, but it turns out that there are two groups of people clapping, one on downbeats and one on upbeats. And it's a really impossible thing to do. So even with these amazing session musicians in LA, they had a really hard time doing it.
Yes, and I've tried to recreate that at home and have never been able to successfully do it.
It's really hard. In fact, Dave Weckl was the session leader down there, and we have these famous guys in there, and he's just like, it was kind of like soup mopping. No soup for you, just kick him off. They couldn't cut it. And, it took them a while to get that down, but it was a really fun experience to create that and to pay tribute to that Basque region for flamenco music that's so amazing and inspirational.
So, Doug, what drove you to the story of Carmen Amaya. What was particularly interesting about her life or her dancing that attracted you to that story?
I think the fact that she was someone who out of obscurity emerged as someone who transformed flamenco dancing. It had been a dance, in my understanding, that had primarily been the province of men. And right. Women danced flamenco, but they were mostly accessories on the performing platform or the stage. Carmen came from a family of dancers and picked it up as a little girl and was just so gifted, so fiery, that when I heard I had seen footage of her dancing and had heard people comment and say how great she was. I'm no judge of flamenco dancing, except as a common person might be. But when I heard this music and had that fiery quality that you suggested earlier, and it was a no contest deal from that point on as to who the story ought to be about. So I did some additional research on her and her career, and realized that not only was she a wonderful dancer, but she also transformed the art of flamenco dancing, introducing different ways to create the rhythms that they dance to, but in particular, introducing the special gift that female dancers bring to an art form like dancing. And
that footage is featured in the special too, which is really fun to see.
That's right. It is. It's very cool footage. We'll make sure we put a link on our website to that so that people can go find the video footage of that. But for now, our listeners, we're going to give them a chance to hear. This is La Capitana. So anyway, that I have to say that is one of my favorite all-time pieces of music that Sam has ever produced, La Capitana. Great, very exciting. Great listen.
Very fun.
Always makes me happy to listen to that.
And it's hard to listen to it and sit still.
That is. It is.
Very hard.
Yeah. So one last story. I think you had already mentioned this early on, earlier in the podcast, Sam. But the there's a great story that you guys call the Rainmaker. That is about.
It might be my favorite story for sure.
What's that?
Amazing. It might be my favorite story for sure. It's just the most unusual and interesting.
Well, Doug, tell us the story of the Rainmaker.
Okay. Well, in this case, we have a sewing machine salesman by the name of C.M. Hatfield, who was a very quiet person, but he had a unique skill. Besides selling sewing machines, in his spare time, he made rain. And you can imagine that in periods of drought, where especially when our country was more agricultural, that the absence of rain would be something that would be a serious handicap and liability. Well, San Diego was experiencing a drought at the same time it was having a worldwide exposition, and the city fathers were concerned that no one would come, and if they did come, that there wouldn't be a way to properly take care of them, because the reservoirs that fed the town's water systems had almost dried up. And so they offered a $10,000 prize to anyone who could come in and create enough rain to fill up their main reservoir. And C.M. Hatfield was quickly at their service, and he traveled out there. And his theory fed on an idea that had been around since the age of Plutarch, where historians had taken notice that after great battles, oftentimes there were very heavy storms, and the theory developed that there was something that went up from the battlefield that fed the skies. I know C.M. Hatfield was asked, can you create rain? And he said, of course I can't create rain, but I can create clouds. And if I can create enough of those, then I can create rain. And he built towers in the woods to the north and to the west of San Diego. He had concocted these formulations that would of chemicals and liquids that would he could light on fire, and the smoke and vapors would rise into the skies. And no sooner had he begun doing this than the rain began to fall, and it fell and it fell. And if I'm not mistaken, it rained in 1 week. It rained 30 inches in San Diego. I don't know if it's ever done that since.
Wow, that's a lot of rain. 30 inches deep or 30 inches wide?
Yeah. Did they tell him to knock it off? They say stop.
Well, at first they were overjoyed.
Right.
And then one dam broke, and then another, and before it was all said and done, I believe there were even people that lost their lives. And they asked him to shut off his vapors, and he said, "I won't do it until I've fulfilled the terms of my contract." Turns out he neglected to actually sign this agreement, and when he went to collect the town council met and told him that he would only get paid if he would take responsibility for all the damage, but it nearly washed San Diego off the map. And they refused to pay him because he refused to cover the damages, which of course would have been probably in the millions of dollars, even in those days. And he rolled out of town, but it was such great advertising. He had a lifelong career as a successful rainmaker. And by successful, I don't necessarily mean creating rain, but getting paid for trying.
I don't think you'd have had the same success in this day of instantaneous communication and social media. I suspect the folks from San Diego would not have given him a great reference. But
well, people still do this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, we're constantly
seed clouds. Yep. Well, so Sam, the fact that it was kind of old west and having to do with rain, and that had to be a nice cinematic opportunity for you.
That's irresistible. Everything about it, you know, just it's got such comic value to it. It's you know, it's so Americana in every way. You know, how do you get more Americana than that story? But, you know, we tried to capture this. This guy must have been incredibly clever. He was an original, a true original. Homespun, self-taught, self-made man, you know, all those things. And so it's just kind of a good earth American story. And it was so much fun to work on it. And I don't know, I think that story still fascinates me to this day. I can't believe it.
So for our listeners, this is The Rainmaker from Innovators. And this has been a pleasure reliving this. I know that that it's a little bit of a vanity project for me to invite you guys to come back on or to come on to celebrate the 25th anniversary of this project, but it's also part of my nudging to people who are in my line of work, people who are in the creative fields. It's very, very easy for us in higher education and very, very easy for us in really any line of endeavor to get in our own bubble and to not imagine that there are different ways to do what we do that might increase our reach, might increase the impact that we can make. And I've always thought that Innovators was a great example of that. It was an example of a high-tech company wanting to do something that was out of their comfort zone. It was probably, Sam, for you and Kurt and the other musicians, something that was a little out of your comfort zone because now you're writing to stories. And Doug, it was probably something out of your comfort zone. You probably had never written a script of this type. And I just always think that when people leave the comfort of their own bubble, very often great creative things happen.
I think you're exactly right on that. I know that was the case for me to be able to be assigned the task to go out and find stories that would in some way lend themselves to musical interpretation, but would also feature an innovative character of some sort was a stretch for me, but it was very fulfilling, and I have loved the responses that we've had to that project in all these 25 years.
Sam, you've written a ton of music. We'll link to your website for our listeners. You're a very well-known guy. Has this been the biggest hit you had, or at least maybe one of the most impactful things you've had?
It's certainly the white. Well, I guess I can't say that now because I write music for World of Warcraft and Overwatch.
Well, that's right. Yeah, now that you're in the video game business,
we're at the other. Actually, those guys are amazingly related too.
Yeah,
and I have loved my experience with that. But yeah, it, certainly the circulation, WordPerfect sent it out to, I don't know, several million people, and we've had a lot of response over the years from it, and I'm very, very grateful to have been given the opportunity. That old definition of luck when opportunity meets preparation. I feel like we were prepared. Loved collaborating with my brother Doug, one of my favorite people in the world, and especially one of my favorite collaborators. And it was just a wonderful experience.
Well, I think I've helped with the circulation a bit. I've probably bought it in every format that it was available.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we were talking about this offline, Steve. I think you got yours for free, and I purchased a couple.
Well, to be fair, I think I've bought four, including one yesterday. So I couldn't find the other three that I had at home. So, it's one of those things that when people think more broadly, when they're willing to we've talked a little bit about in our discussions here for higher education, and Sam has very graciously agreed to serve on various committees for me over the years as we've talked about music education. We talk about the way the world used to be, that it was eye-shaped people, that people were looking for people with narrow and very deep understanding and knowledge sets. And nowadays, particularly in the workforce, but I think in lots of different places and ways, the people that are more successful are what we call T-shaped people. They have a good, strong grounding depth in what they're really good at, but they but they also reach out well. They extend into other areas that are a little bit outside of what their perhaps their primary expertise may be, and really add value to that. And this project always reminds me of that. It reminds me that you know, here are people outside of what they do narrowly and deeply very well, but they've by reaching out to one another, they've shaped a whole new project and really a whole new way of telling stories and sharing music. I just always thought that was very innovative.
Thanks, Steve.
Well, and I remember when this first came out, and it was in fact at a time when music was transforming in some ways.
Yeah.
Compositions were changing.
That's right.
I wouldn't compare it necessarily to when Star Wars came out with animation and movies, but it was certainly a transformative period of time for music. And I had these great memories of my dad, who went out and bought a new CD player, put it in the house, and he'd close the doors. He was a very conservative an engineer, and then he'd crank up the volume for new age music.
And there you go.
This kind of thing, and I thought, wow, this is really cool, Dad. The neighbors would call over, is everything okay over there? No, it's just Dad with his new CD player.
Well, there
and
you
big
go.
Speakers.
You know, I missed that time. I don't know that you could even do this today, honestly. I don't know if there's an appetite or a market, or you know, I'm not sure. There was a lot of that kind of thing in that day, and it seems to have run its course, and maybe it just aged out. I'm not sure.
Well, thanks to both of you for joining us. It's been a great, I think it's probably been a nice introduction for many of our listeners, but for those that were aware of the project in the past, a nice review also. And anyway, thanks so much. You've been very kind to join us. We appreciate it.
You're welcome, and thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Solutions for Higher Education, a podcast featuring Scott L. Wyatt, the president of Southern Utah University in Cedar City, Utah. We've had as our guests today Doug and Sam Carden, who were instrumental in putting together the very innovative project called Innovators, which is celebrating its 25th anniversary right now. And we'll put up links where you can find ways to find that. We're grateful to them for having joined us by phone. We're grateful to you, our listeners, for tuning in, and we look forward to seeing you again soon. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to Solutions for Higher Education. To subscribe to this podcast, please visit www.suu.edu/President's Podcast, where you will find both the audio and a written transcript of today's podcast. The original music for this podcast was composed by Jack Barton, a master's degree student in music technology at SUU. For more information about Southern Utah University, please visit www.suu.edu.